The House please come to order? Okay. Members, please indicate their presence by voting. The members back there on the second row. We do have a quorum present to conduct business. The invocation today will be presented by the Honorable Representative Parnell. Would members please rise?
Let us pray. Lord God, we offer you thanks for this beautiful day. We thank you for bringing each of us to this place, and we ask that you would grant us wisdom this day. Grant that our words would be tempered by discernment, that our actions reflect the love that only you can provide, and that the work we conclude here will bring glory and honor to you. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Representative Messick, would you please lead us in the pledge?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Bundy?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread on the journal, noting that it's one of our two righteous brothers that give our prayer today.
Without objection, the prayer will be spread across the journal. Representative Martin?
Under introduction of guests, we end that.
We're not there yet, Representative Martin. Almost. The clerk, please certify the journal for the previous legislative day.
I certify the correctness of the journal for the 110th legislative day.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent. The House Journal is certified by the Chief Clerk be approved.
Without objection, the House Journals are approved. Mr. Majority Leader.
May the Journal reflect that Representative Betty Davis has previously been excused from the call of the House today.
Representative Davis will be shown as excused. Now, Representative Martin, this brings us down to introduction of guests.
Well, Madam Speaker, I'd like to introduce a very special person that I just met a couple hours ago. She's walking the hallways about 8:30 this morning, wondering where the legislators were. It's a lady that took 36 hours to come from Austria. She lives in the Danube in Austria, and she's a doctor of philosophy. And let's give an Alaskan welcome to Mrs. Dr. Berthe Stelfauer.
Further guests today for introduction. Representative Cott.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Today we have two special guests, Carol Hart, the President of the Elite Hospitality and Training Center from Anchorage, and Ron Hewitt, the Executive Director of the Alaska Hotel and Motel Association. They're both back in the Karadovich Gallery, and help me welcome them to Juneau.
Representative Sanders.
Madam Speaker, in the gallery behind me, I'd like to introduce the wife of my aide, Rhonda Lowe, and their son, Christian.
I think I've introduced
Noel before. If not, Noel Lowe's back there, too.
Further guests for introduction. This brings us down to messages. Do we have messages from the governor?
Yes, Madam Speaker. Messages dated May 5th, stating the governor has signed the following bills, and they're transmitting the engrossed and enrolled copies to the Lieutenant Governor's Office for permanent filing. SCS for CS for House Bill 79 Finance, Chapter Number 17, SLA 1995. CS for Senate Bill 41 Judiciary, Chapter Number 15, SLA 1995, and House CS for Senate Bill 68 Hess, Chapter Number 16, SLA 1995. I have no further messages from the Governor, Madam Speaker.
We have messages from the other body?
A message dated May 5th stating the Senate has passed House Joint Resolution Number 39, House Joint Resolution Number 41, and CS for House Bill 169 Resources. Also, a message dated May 5th stating the Senate has passed CS for House Bill 237 Judiciary amended with the following amendment, Senate CS for House Bill 237 Judiciary, effective date, failed Senate, and it is returned for consideration. I have no further messages from the other body, Madam Speaker.
We have communications.
There are no communications.
Reports of standing committees?
The House Judiciary Committee has considered the qualifications of the following members of the Commission on Judicial Counsel, Patrick T. Brown, Joanne Holmes, Arthur H. Peterson, and recommends that the appointments be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. The report was signed by Porter Chair Tui, Bundy, Beasy, Green, B. Davis, and Finkelstein. The reports also stated it does not reflect an intent by any member to vote for or against this individual during any further sessions for purposes of confirmation. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 327, Eliminate Monte Carlo Nights, recommending do pass, Veazey, do not pass, Finkelstein. No recommendation, Porter, B. Davis, Green, Bundy, and Toohey. A fiscal note was attached. The report was signed by Porter. Chairman, House Bill 327 has no further referral. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered House Bill 328, Discount for State Museum Visit by Groups, attaches a zero fiscal note, recommending do pass, Roekberg, Cabina, and Cott. No recommendation, Elton, Masick, and Sanders. The report was signed by Cott, Chairman. House Bill 328 has no further referral. The Community Regional Affairs Committee has considered CS for Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 13, CNRA, 100th Year of Women in State Legislatures, recommending do pass, Osterman, Ivan, and Cott. No recommendation, Veazey. The report was signed by Osterman and Ivan, co-chairs. CS, SCR 13, CNRA, has no further referral. The Judiciary Committee has considered Senate Bill Number 6, amended, suspend driver's license traffic offenses, recommends it be replaced with House CS for Senate Bill 6, CNRA, with the same title, recommending do pass, Porter, Green, Toohey, B. Davis, and Finkelstein. The report was signed by Porter, Chairman. SB 6, amended, has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Judiciary Committee has considered CS for Senate Bill 26, finance, deadly weapon offenses by juveniles, recommending do pass, Veazey, Green, Bundy, and Toohey. No recommendation, Porter. The report was signed by Porter, Chairman. CSSB 26, Finn, as a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered CS for Senate Bill 53, Judiciary, Omnibus Insurance Reform, recommends it be replaced with House CS for Senate Bill 53, Labor and Commerce, with the new title, recommending do pass, Cabina and Cott. No recommendation, Sanders, Elton, Porter, amend Roekberg. The report was signed by Cott Chairman. CS SB 53, Jude, has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Judiciary Committee has considered CS for Senate Bill 79, CNRA, Adjustments for Defective Survey, recommending do pass, Porter, Bundy, Toohey. No recommendation, Veazey and Green. The report was signed by Porter, Chairman. CSSB 79, CNRA, has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered CS for Senate Bill 84, Finance, Appropriation to Permanent Fund Principal, recommending do pass, Kelly, Martin, do not pass, Brown. No recommendation, Foster, Hanley, Coring, Parnell, Navarre, Mulder, Ontario, amend, Grusendorf. The report was signed by Hanley and Foster, co-chair. CSSB 84, Finn, has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered CS for Senate Bill 130, Rules, Marine Pilots, recommending do pass, Foster, Hanley, Mulder, Martin, Parnell, Coring, Grusendorf, Kelly, Ontario. No recommendation, Brown. The report was signed by Hanley and Foster, co-chairs. CSSB 130, Rules, has no further referral. Community Regional Affairs Committee has considered Senate Bill 166, amended, budget deadline for Borough School Board, recommending do pass, Cott and Ivan. No recommendation, Osterman and Veazey. The report was signed by Osterman and Ivan, co-chairs. SB 166, amended, has no further referral. The Resources Committee has considered House Joint Resolution Number 48, Kenai Peninsula Subsistence Proposal, recommends it be replaced with CS for House Joint Resolution 48, Resources, with a new title, attaches a zero fiscal note, recommending do pass, Green and Davies. No recommendation, Osterman, Cott, Ogun, and Nikolai. The report was signed by Green, co-chair. House Joint Resolution 48 has no further referral. I have no further standing committee reports, Madam Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
There are no special committee reports.
Citations or resolutions today for introduction?
Citations honoring legal counsel, Alaska Legislative Legal Services by Representatives Toohey and Bundy. Honoring the Veterans of Foreign Wars Department of Alaska 50th Annual State Convention by Representatives Cott and Osterman. Honoring Matanuska Susitna Science Olympiad Steering Committee and the State Competition Winners Colony Middle School, Palmer Junior Middle School by Senator Green. Honoring Ray Perkins by Senator Taylor and Representative Grusendorf. In Memoriam, Harold Spark, by Senator Hoffman, Adams, and Lincoln, and Representatives Ivan, Foster, and Nikolai. I have no further citations or resolutions for introduction.
Bills today for introduction?
There are no bills for introduction, Madam Speaker.
Brings us down to consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item on today's calendar?
CS for Senate Bill 5, State Affairs, by the Senate State Affairs Committee, entitled An Act Prescribing the Use and Characteristics of Voting Booths Employed in Elections and the Color of Ballots Used in State Primary Elections. The State Affairs Committee has considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with House CS for CS for Senate Bill 5, State Affairs, with the new title, recommending do pass James Porter Ogan, no recommendation, Willis and Robinson. The report was signed by James Chairman. Finance Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with House CS for CS for Senate Bill 5 Finance with a new title, recommending do pass Mulder, Martin, Coring, Grusendorf, Brown, Terrio, and Hanley and Foster. The report was signed by Hanley and Foster co-chairs. CSSB, I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam Speaker, move and ask unanimous consent that the House Finance Committee substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 5 State Affairs be adopted, with a new title, be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the House Finance Committee substitute will be adopted. Does the clerk have amendments on her desk?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 5 Finance be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection, we are under third. Would the clerk please read the title for the third and final time?
House CS for CS for Senate Bill 5 Finance by the House Finance Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the Alaska Election Code and to State Election Administration.
Debate. Represent Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I was asked to carry the bill today, and I'll just briefly tell you that this is an elections bill that takes care of several different areas. First of all, the senator from East Anchorage introduced this bill dealing with problems that voters experienced at the voting booth last year when they had different colored ballots for whether you voted in a Republican primary or whether you voted in an open primary, and that was felt that was obviously gave away at least what ballot you took and so forth, and that wasn't fair. So this bill started off making those changes. And then the lieutenant governor had a transition team that looked at a number of our elections policies in the state and made many recommendations to the legislature as to what types of changes that will make the election process less cumbersome and more fair and to everybody. So that transition report also is included in not all the changes, but a lot of the changes that were felt to be non-controversial and made the system better are included in this bill. And finally, House Bill 132, which I and the Speaker sponsored early on in the session, is rolled into this bill also that would require all candidates for election to be registered and signed up by June 1st. And it would not allow for people to get into the election process simply by petition or any other way any longer. It levels the playing field. It requires everybody to be in by a certain date. It requires everybody to do their APOC reports at the same time and follow under the same criteria that major party candidates have to presently fall under. So I have more information on all of those subjects, but that's what's contained in the bill, and if there are any other further questions, I'd be happy to expound on it or give you more information. If not, I would just simply urge members to vote for the bill. Thank you.
Representative Porter.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I, too, would wish to be identified with the remarks of the Minority Leader. I think this is a good bill and would ask my colleagues to vote yes.
Further debate? Representative James.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Yes, and I also would rise to support what was given to the body by the Minority Leader. I will draw to the attention of the body that there is a change in the title and that there will be needing to be a resolution passed to change the title, and I'll talk about that at that time if you need to.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question being, so shall the House adopt House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 5? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
37 yeas, 0 nays.
And so House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 5 has passed the House. I'll stand briefly at ease. The clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar. Representative Porter?
With your permission, revert back up to introduction of guests.
Without objection, we're back up under introduction of guests.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Hiding in the corner where I can't see her, unless a friend of mine pointed it out, is a past member of the legislature and a very good friend and constituent of mine, Virginia Collins.
Representative Collins, as a former member of this body, it gives us great honor to offer you the privilege of the floor.
I was going to say,
thank you very much. Further guests for introduction. Brings us back to the calendar. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
CS for Senate Bill 28, Finance, title amended by the Senate Finance Committee, entitled An Act Requiring Admissions Inspection Upon Certain Transfers of Motor Vehicle Ownership Relating to Fees for Registration Not Conducted at a Motor Vehicle Emissions Inspection Station and Fees for Motor Vehicle Emissions Control Programs Limiting Motor Vehicle Emissions Inspections to Not More Than Once Every 2 Years and Imposing a Penalty for Operating a Motor Vehicle in Violation of Emissions Requirements and Providing for an Effective Date. Finance Committee considered the bill, recommending to pass Martin, Kelly, and Brown. No recommendation, Mulder, Coring, and Terrio. The report was signed by Mulder, acting chair. I have no committee substitute or amendments on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam Speaker, move and ask unanimous consent. The committee substitute for Senate Bill 28, Finance, title amendment be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There is objection. This bill will be held in third for tomorrow's calendar. I'll stand at ease. The clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
Bill 93, Resources by the Senate Resources Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the Disposal of State Land Along the Dalton Highway and Providing for an Effective Date. The Resources Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with House CS for Senate Bill 93, Resources, with the same title, recommending due pass Cott, Ogun, Williams, Green, no recommendation, Nikolai, Davies, and Osterman. The report was signed by Green co-chair. Finance Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with House CS for Senate Bill 93, Resources, with the same title, attaches a zero fiscal note, recommending do pass Foster, Hanley, Mulder, Martin, Parnell, Coring, Terrio. Do not pass Grusendorf and Brown. No recommendation of Navarre and Kelly. The report was signed by Hanley and Foster. Co-chairs, I have one committee substitute on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent that House Resource Committee substitute for Senate Bill 93, Resources, be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the House Resources Committee substitute will be adopted. Does the clerk have amendments on her desk?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader?
Madam Speaker, move and ask unanimous consent that the House Committee substitute for Committee substitute Senate Bill 93, Resources, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There is objection. That will be held in third for tomorrow's calendar. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
CS for Senate Bill 1.
I'll just briefly stand at ease. Would you send a page out and have them make sure? House, come back to order. House, come back to order. House, come to order. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
Yes, for Senate Bill 123, financed by the Senate Finance Committee, an act relating to student loan programs and fees for review of post-secondary education institutions relating to a post-secondary student exchange program administered by the Western Interstate Commission on Higher Education and providing for an effective date. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee considered the bill, recommending due pass G. Davis, Bundy, Toohey. No recommendation, V.Z. Robinson and Bryce. The report was signed by Bundy, co-chair. I have amendments on my desk, Madam Speaker.
The clerk, please read amendment number one.
Amendment number one by Representative Elton to page 5, line 27.
Representative Elton.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move amendment number one.
There is objection. Representative Elton.
Madam Speaker, this amendment is relatively straightforward, relatively simple. It allows a student loan deferment for volunteers in the AmeriCorps program, the new national volunteer program. It's simply a continuation of a time-honored state policy that allows deferments of loans while you're serving in either national volunteer programs or you're serving in military service. For example, Peace Corps volunteers are able to defer their student loans. VISTA volunteers able to defer their student loans. The AmeriCorps program actually rolled in the VISTA provisions. It's a volunteer program. The members that serve in AmeriCorps are paid living expenses of $7,000 to $15,000 a year. Clearly, a volunteer in that kind of program can't probably afford to pay back their student loan program, and we'd hate to have anything in our statutes that precluded a person from volunteering for national service. So, Madam Speaker, I'll kind of leave it at that, and if anybody has any questions, I'd...
Representative Bundy? Representative Parnell?
Madam Speaker, I can't find anybody on the front row that has a copy of the amendment.
I'll stand briefly at ease. Representative Cabina?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question to the sponsor of the amendment. It's my understanding that this isn't really a change to the existing law, that it's more of a name change because they've combined in these groups, so it's sort of a technical name change as much as a change to the law. Is that accurate?
Representative Elton?
Madam Speaker, it's partially accurate. The VISTA program is covered now under the deferment provisions. VISTA was rolled into the AmeriCorps program, but the AmeriCorps program is the parameters of that national volunteer service are expanded from what the VISTA program was. But VISTA was rolled into AmeriCorps, Madam Speaker.
Further debate? Representative Mulder?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the maker of the amendment, included with the deferment, is the interest deferred? Does it continue to accumulate, or is it simply halted at that point in time?
Representative Elton?
Madam Speaker, I don't know the answer to that question. The provisions for this deferment would be the same as the provisions for deferment for military service, deferment for the Peace Corps program, deferment for VISTA, and deferment for unemployment. But, Madam Speaker, I don't know about the interest.
Representative Bryce?
Actually, if I could direct the member's attention to page 5, line 2 through 5, it does make it clear. May I have the lead of the body to read a little bit here. But the borrower's obligation to pay interest shall continue.
Further debate on amendment number 1. Ready for the question? The question?
Speaker.
Representative Robinson?
I just wanted to state on this amendment that I have a conflict because I sit on the AmeriCorps board. Would I ask not to vote on this issue?
There is objection. Representative Robinson, you will be required to vote. Further debate on amendment number 1. Are you ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt amendment number 1? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
33 yeas, 4 nays.
And so amendment number 1 passes the House. The clerk, please read amendment number 2.
Amendment number 2 by Representatives Cott, Sanders, and Ivan, beginning page 2, line 2.
Representative Cott.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move amendment number 2.
There is objection. Representative Cott.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Amendment number 2 is a pretty simple amendment. It just adjusts the amount of money that a student can apply for, the loan amount for vocational school operations. Madam Speaker, I believe that if we don't do this, we're going to see a drastic change in how vocational schools are operating here in Alaska today. Madam Speaker, provisions of this bill allow for increases for students that are attending what we would refer to as the traditional or undergraduate programs in colleges. We're seeing a $3,000 increase from $5,500 to $8,500. Madam Speaker, I think this should also be applied to those students that are attending or wish to attend vocational schools. Madam Speaker, we're seeing a reduction in available labor pools today, not only in the travel industry, but other areas as well. For instance, auto mechanics, cosmetologists, welders, paralegals, computer technicians, as well as truckers. Not everyone is cut out for a college education. There are some of us that have no desire to attend college. And Madam Speaker, by adjusting these numbers upwards, which is still less than what it was, I might add, will provide those individuals who have no desire to attend college the opportunity to better themselves in a vocation that they're interested in. So, Madam Speaker, I think it's a good amendment. We have compromised to some extent, and I would ask my colleagues to support it.
Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I rise to oppose the amendment. The term was used vocational schools, but I think the more accurate description of these schools are for-profit private schools. They exist to make a profit, first and foremost. There has been some information distributed. You've probably gotten faxes that somehow this bill is an elitist bill because it would impact these for-profit private schools. And I don't think that's the case at all. I certainly agree with the previous speaker that not everyone either has to or should attend college. But certainly everyone who applies for a student loan should repay their student loans because they impact the fiscal soundness of the loan program and they impact the ability of other students to get loans. The purpose of this bill is to raise the fiscal integrity of the student loan program. A couple of years ago, we were unable to sell bonds and get them insured. Because we've moved in the direction of making this program more fiscally sound, we are now able to insure bonds and sell them at a lower price, which, of course, translates to lower interest rate for students. I think this amendment would jeopardize the fiscal soundness of the student loan program. I distributed information to members, and I would invite you to take a look at what the default rate is for these private for-profit schools. Some of them over 50% default rate. Now, that does not impact the school. The owner of that school still takes the student loan money as a profit. But the student who defaults will ultimately lose their PFD. They have their wages if they're working guaranteed. So we're not doing these people a favor by encouraging them to go into schools, and the travel industry was mentioned. Good Lord, Madam Speaker, just recently in the news this spring, the airlines have cut back the percentage they're giving to travel agents. The travel agencies are saying, we've got too many agents. We've got to lay some of our people off. There isn't any of the subjects that are covered in these private schools that can't be covered with longer-term schools. Many of them are covered with the old community college system now in the university. It's certainly not intended to exclude people. It's intended to be a facility to help people. It's going to help the people who would be potential students for these private private for-profit schools and make sure that they don't get into debt over their head and then have to go into default and be further behind than when they started. And it's to help all the hardworking students throughout the state have access to a student loan program. If we don't keep it fiscally sound, remember, there isn't any GF money that supports this program anymore. It has to stand on its own legs. And as such, we cannot be lending money to people who won't pay it back. It's that simple. And the record isn't good on these for-profit schools.
Further debate? Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you. Madam Speaker, I just take exception, I guess, to and I haven't spent a lot of time on this issue. It kind of came to me in the last few days what the problem was here, probably like many people on the floor here. But I do take exception to painting all of the people that are working in these fields or trying to get educated in these fields with the same brush. You know, I mean, travel agents or hotel motel clerks or whatever is being offered in these vocational programs, I think is really vital to our state. And to have people that can get training with computers and modern technology changing all the time and different new ways of doing things, we need to have the ability for our young people or old people to be able to get educated to make career changes or whatever. And I think just to say that we need to tighten up everything on this particular class of people because they don't pay their bills, I think is really, I think, painting that group of people wrongly because there are a lot of them that do pay their bills and pay back their loans and so forth. So if anything, they ought to look at whether or not, you know, we even want to have a loan program or not, or other types of mechanisms on their screening process for who gets the loans to try to do a better job in who they're giving the loans to or managing them. So I think it's an unfair attack. I support the amendment.
Representative James.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I look at this a little different way. Number one, we're talking about student loans here, and loans need to be paid back. There is a direct relationship, and I'm not going to say that this has anything to do with private schools, as did my person from Anchorage on that. I believe that there is a direct relationship to the length of time that these classes are given, to the default rate, and the real link to that is how much can they make, what is their salary after they finish taking this training. And that's where the problem is. If we have these short class periods of time when people are given vocational training and the job that they're preparing themselves for doesn't pay sufficient amount of money for these people to be able to be paying back their loan, then I believe that we ought to be dealing with these people in a different program. Maybe we need grants for these people to have these vocational programs. It's a whole other issue. But there is a direct relationship to the length of time that these vocational classes take place, to the rate of pay that these people are getting for the job when they're finished, and their inability to pay their student loan, and therefore the default rate goes up. There are some exceptions to that, and one exception I would take would be the Teamsters in their 6 weeks course of teaching drivers to get a CDL license. They'll get finished, and they'll get a good job that pays them sufficient amount of money for them to pay their classes back. But can we lower the level that far to protect those kinds of classes? I'm not sure we ought to, particularly when the current default rate is so severe. We have an average rate of about twice of what the national average is on repaying of student loans. I think that if we're going to be keeping a safe and sound situation for people, student, to get loans, we have to do something that encourages the repayment of these loans. And that can most definitely be done by creating classes that will get them into an occupation that pays a decent wage.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I rise in support of this amendment. It seems inconsistent to me that on one hand we talk about welfare reform and getting people off of the welfare rolls, and on the other hand, we very neatly say that we should not provide any means to get into career or vocational education. Madam Speaker, the fallacy of that is that universities are not for everyone. And when we had community colleges were able to provide much of this type of training. However, in our wisdom, we saw fit to get rid of the community colleges with a clear statement to the legislative bodies at that time that the mission of the community college would be carried out. We all know that that has not happened, that those types of training programs are no longer available, and unless we provide these types of training programs, and there's no one in this body cannot say there is not a way for the student loan to be paid back, because it can be paid back by attaching dividends, as has already been said, and that is done very frequently. So I would believe that we would want to make sure that there are vocational, technical programs for each and every young person in this state, or old person, as the case may be, to be able to get some kind of training in a time when we talk about welfare reform.
Representative Sanders.
Madam Speaker, thank you. I signed on to this amendment because I agree with it. I'm a big promoter of vocational schools. I think they're very necessary, and like has been said on the floor here, not everybody is cut out to go to college. And I don't see, looking at a paper that the sponsor of the bill had passed out, I don't see where the default rate is that much bigger on these vocational schools than it is in the regular four-year colleges. And the other thing is, to start with, I think everybody should pay back their loans, but that's kind of unrealistic. But so many of these people who go to these vocational schools are not young people who don't have families and things and can afford all the time for the cultural and social aspects of a college. They need to go to some kind of a concentrated course where they can do something in just a few weeks or a few months that will allow them to make a living, because maybe they've been displaced from their older jobs, or perhaps they've never been in the job market. You know, they're just trying to work their way off of welfare or something. I really feel that these schools are necessary, and I'm going to support this amendment, and I hope everyone else on the floor will.
Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like to associate myself with the remarks of the previous two speakers and also to point out that while the default rates are high, most of them are in the vicinity of order of 30%. And, Madam Speaker, what you need to look at is that that means that 70% are paying them back. So there's a large number of people who, and even in the worst case, it's a little over 50%, which is, you know, an astoundingly high default rate. But the other side of that coin is that at least 45% of those people paid the loans back. And so I don't think that we should take the ability of those people away to get the loans and take advantage of this training. I think what we need to look at is, as the minority leader indicated, perhaps better screening. And we certainly, as the member from District 22 pointed out, have other means to recover that money when they are in default, i.e. the PFD. So Madam Speaker, I think that we're looking at the wrong part of the problem here. The problem is to get the loans repaid. It's not to take away people's opportunities. Thank you.
Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I share the concerns about the default rate, and the default rate is clearly higher to at least some degree. But, Madam Speaker, the question I have is, are there ways to achieve reductions in the default rate and giving the tools, continuing to give the tools to the Commission necessary to deal with those? And one of the problems is it's hard to understand this bill because the way it's written, we can't see they've just repealed and reenacted, so I don't have in front of me the other statute. I have two questions. One is the new provisions put in, if this amendment were to be adopted, those are clearly more liberal in terms of amounts and time periods than what's in the bill. Is it less than or the same than existing law? And I think the answer is it is still less liberal than existing law, which doesn't differentiate in the amounts as to what kind of program it is. But I may be incorrect, so I'd like to ask that question. My second question is just a very practical one. I have never gotten a student loan from the commission. When you go in and you get the student loan, you ask for $6,000. Do you have to give justification for the cost? My memory is you have to submit the costs, because I had a friend who did it years ago, but maybe you don't anymore, that you can't go in and ask for the maximum amount unless you have some evidence that the costs are going to be covered. And I think the reason it's important is if that check is there, we already have the check in the bill that scholarship loans may be only used to attend a career education program that's, number one, operating on a sound fiscal basis, number two, that's already operated for 2 years, number three, has submitted an executed program participation agreement as required by the commission. So, again, there is should be another check on unreasonable costs. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Representative Hogan.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I rise in support of the amendment. Being a craftsman myself, I didn't have the opportunity to go to a trade school. I taught myself as I went along on the earn as you learn plan. However, if there's a problem with if there's a problem with collections, it's reflective of the possibility of maybe some substandard schools, and maybe the answer to the problem would be to require some higher accreditation of those schools, or look at some way that if someone isn't satisfied with something, generally they don't feel like they should pay for it. Maybe that's the problem here. But I will rise in support of the amendment. I think it will possibly end up having more people on welfare if we don't support this program. So that's where I'm at. Thanks.
Representative Osterman.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I also rise in support of the amendment. I've always been a very strong supporter of vocational schools, particularly starting in high school and then working on up in the state of Alaska. I really feel strongly that the college education is not necessarily what the majority of the children and the majority of the kids that come through our school systems are looking for. And then I also support, of course, the vocational education opportunities that they have through these other schools. The sheet that the sponsor passed out to us today has some remarkable numbers on it. I'll have to agree with him that one course on here, bartenders and management, at a 53.91% default rate is pretty bad. And if that's what we're trying to solve, let's go after that one course and solve that one course. But when you take the rest of these numbers and look at them, especially the bottom line of his sheet here says that the colleges have a 29.4% default rate of their own. You add the rest of this stuff up that he's given us here, the average default rate for all the rest of these other classes is 32.8%. And my figures might be off just a hair bit in scribbling these down real fast, but that's only a 3.4% difference between the rest of all the courses in the state and our universities. And the other part, of course, that it bothers me is at a 32.8% default rate on all the rest of the courses here, that's approximately 70% of the other students that go to these things are not defaulting on them. And are we going to penalize the 70% of good students by dropping down the amount of money they can get to go to school? So I stand in support of the amendment.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. You know, we need to ask the question, how would private enterprise do it? And I think this is probably what they would do. I applaud the drafters. You look at where your default rate is and you try and address it. And I think this is what's being done. But this isn't private enterprise. We all know that government's involved in areas where there's some question where we should be. But and I agree we should be in this area. But I have also a question that has been asked, and I'm sure the carrier of the bill will address it, relating to, you know, what's the current amount available to these students. But another question I have, and it would seem we're trying to address a default rate, and the students in a regular college are now allowed a certain amount of student loan, and that's being increased. So it would seem that default rate would probably be going to be increased also. If an undergraduate is allowed $5,500 now and going to be allowed $8,500, they're going to have a lot more to pay back over the same period of time, or even if the time's extended. But I would probably assume that default rate would probably go up too then. But I think the carrier of the bill has some questions, and I'm walking a fence on it and waiting for some answers.
Representative Bundy, I think everybody's spoken.
Thank you. We'll step up in the state room. To answer some of these questions, I'll try to see if I can answer as many as I remember. The current default rate for a college student in Alaska is 12%. And it is headed down because the rigid enforcement and collection, we had, as you know, a much different loan system in years gone by where we had forgiveness portions and that sort of thing and an incredibly low interest rate. And it encouraged people not to take their responsibilities seriously. And so there was a high default rate that has decreased considerably. It was asked how much does the current program allow. The current program allows $5,500 for a 10-week school or a 9-month school. Now, students use that money to allow them to go to school, whether they pay tuition with it or they pay rent or whatever. And it doesn't seem logical that we would allow for 10 weeks to have the same amount of a loan as someone in school for an entire year, or at least for a school year, 9 months. The representative from Palmer indicated one of the problems, and perhaps I'm a little hypersensitive to this issue, because I serve on the Post-Secondary Ed Commission. One of our jobs is to review appeals and petitions that people have when they are in default, essentially. And so often I have read letters from people who are from modest circumstances, maybe not real sophisticated people, who were
weren't screened at all other than, can you get a student loan? And they were encouraged to join one of these private for-profit schools. And then halfway through the course, they find out it wasn't what they wanted. They're not qualified. It doesn't meet their expectations. Or they finish the course and there's no employment available. Or the employment that's available are these menial $3, $4 an hour jobs. And they're finding it very challenging to pay their loan back, or they don't think they should have to pay it back because the state somehow certified this school by providing a loan, and they expected the state then to indicate that this was a valid school. Let me point out, these schools are not accredited. They're not accredited by the state. They're not accredited by any federal agency. They do not get any federal funds. These schools are, they exist to make a profit. That is their goal. And so the students that get involved sometimes, in some cases, may end up a secondary consideration. They're short-term, and they have a default rate that is often three and four times the other students. Now, the purpose of this bill is to get the student loan program back on a sound financial basis. The insurers of our bonds have said, if you keep up this high default rate, we are not going to insure your bonds. If they don't insure our bonds, we have much more difficult time selling the bonds. If we don't sell the bonds, students don't get loans. It's as simple as that. And if we are able to sell the bonds and they're uninsured, students pay higher interest rates. It's as simple as that. Now, this, I want everyone to have access to training, whether it be college training or vocational training. There's nothing elitist about my opposition to this amendment. My concern is for the whole student loan program. If we adopt this amendment, we fly in the face of what the East Coast bankers have said is important if they want us to sell bonds. And if you feel that you wish to ignore the advice of the people who insure our bonds, then adopt this amendment. If, however, you want the student loan program to stick around for a while so that those 70% that pay their loans back in some of these cases can still get loans, I mean, good Lord, if we want these people that default to not have to pay back their loans, give them a grant, as was suggested. But don't jeopardize the loan program for everybody else. We simply must make this into a sound business proposition. While it was mentioned by the representative from Soldotna that if this were a private industry, we would very clearly know what to do. We would cut our losses. This is obviously not, and we have to have good public policy. But good public policy, as we've tried all this session, also means fiscal responsibility.
You ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 2? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please tally the board or lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
24 yeas, 13 nays.
And so Amendment Number 2 passes the House. Clerk, please read Amendment Number 3.
Amendment Number 3 by Representative Brown and Mulder, beginning page 9, line 20.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move Amendment Number 3.
There is objection. Representative Brown.
Madam Speaker, this bill, this amendment would affect the portion of the bill that deals with eligibility of incarcerated people, people in our prisons, to receive loans. The reason that this amendment is before you is a problem that has come up with relation to the Department of Corrections, the Department of Law. This amendment and the way that it would modify the bill was part of the House companion bill to this legislation, House Bill 257, which did get consideration in two of our committees, and in the amendment I'm proposing was adopted by the HES committee and did go through the Finance Committee in this form. Madam Speaker, the problem is, if the body would look at this, in this bill we are prohibiting people in a incarcerated in a correctional facility from getting a student loan. And the difficulty is that for many years, the federal government has had a program called the Pell Grants, where prisoners are able to receive direct grants, not loans, but grants from the federal government for books and tuition. And that program for many years has provided some access to higher education for people who are incarcerated. Last fall, Congress eliminated those grants. In the Cleary lawsuit settlement that I know members are familiar with, that has set some standards for how the state manages the prison facilities, it provides that if those Pell Grants ever went away, the parties to that litigation would come up with a new solution to providing some access for prisoners to have higher education. The Department of Law recommends that we, or they have worked on this, thought about this, what kind of solution could there be? They feel that making the prisoners responsible for their own payback is by far the best, most cost-effective solution for the state of Alaska. Otherwise, we leave ourselves open to the possibility that if we go in and close off this avenue at the same year that the Pell Grants have been eliminated, that the court is not going to look very favorably on that, and that the state could be ordered to pay part of the tuition, or the Department of Corrections would have to pay that out of the budget. We all know there's no extra money in the Department of Corrections budget for that purpose. So this avoids that potential outcome and would, I think, be a fair policy, Madam Speaker. What it would say is that the person, if they're going to borrow money for the tuition and books, that would have to be for some study that they were going to complete right when they're going to get out so that they can start paying it back. And it would have to be within 2 months of the time. Their program of study would have to be completed within 2 months of when they were going to be released, and so that they would have the opportunity to then pay that back and have responsibility for their own education. As I also pointed out in the prior debate, that we do have the opportunity, once these people are out, if they are not paying it back, to garnish the permanent fund dividends to satisfy the obligation to the student loan fund. Madam Speaker, besides those reasons of being cost-effective, I would argue that this is also a reasonable policy for us to have. We do not want people coming out of prison to get into more trouble. Obviously, if people have education and an opportunity to work and have a job and have income, they're much less likely to get into problems. I saw a study recently done in the state of Texas where they were trying to study recidivism rates, and they looked at the amount of higher education or the amount of education that people coming out of prison had and tracked that back to recidivism. And it showed that people who did have secondary higher education, the recidivism rate drops to almost nothing. And it's the people who are illiterate and who do not have an education that are causing the recidivism and are, you know, generally the biggest problem. So I think there is some logic in if we wish to not have more people coming out of prison recidivating, then having this opportunity there makes some sense. Obviously, we don't have any track record on this because up to now, prisoners have not sought student loans. As far as we know, I'm told that you don't have to identify yourself as a prisoner when you're applying, and so I guess some might have been approved, but they haven't been applying because there have been these federal grants, and that's ended now, and that's necessitating us to make some decisions about how the state will treat this issue, and I'd recommend that we adopt Amendment number 3.
Representative Mulder?
Briefly, I'll give two main reasons why I co-sponsored this amendment. First, I believe that if we don't do this approach, we're going to have to pay for the cost of this out of our general fund as a grant. Second, it's a loan. It's not a guarantee. It's not a grant. You know, I think the department can show some discretion in relation to who is actually a good risk to grant a loan to and who isn't. But I have every confidence, Madam Speaker, that except that we adopt this amendment, that the cost of the correctional budget will go up just because we're going to have to provide funding for these people to do these programs. And I don't think that's necessarily in the best interest of the state.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I rise to oppose the amendment. As was stated earlier, there used to be Pell Grants for these inmates. And the federal government, in its wisdom and choice of public policy, decided to stop offering Pell Grants to inmates. Obviously, there's a finite amount of money, and do we want to put it with inmates, or do we want to put it with people who are in the trenches doing their job every day? I wonder if we want to, in some occasions anyway, follow the federal government's lead and not question their ability or their wisdom when they cancel these Pell Grants. It was mentioned the Cleary decision as well. I think many of us are very frustrated with the Cleary decision. And if you feel like we should continue to knuckle under to Cleary, perhaps we ought to vote for this amendment. Basically, what this amendment says is, would you like to co-sign a loan for an inmate? Now, we have an incredible high recidivism rate in Alaska. We'll lend them money, they get out of prison, they go back to prison and default on their loan. That's a further attack on the financial stability of our loan program. If you feel comfortable co-signing a loan for an inmate, then I'd suggest you vote for this amendment. If not, I'd suggest you vote against it. Remember, there will only be, some of the corrections estimate, 2 to 5 people a year that would apply for this. I don't think the corrections budget is going to be so severely damaged if they would have to pay for the tuition for 2 inmates.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Well, I think that this, in fact, does kind of follow the direction that the federal government is saying, and saying stop making grants in these cases. And what we're talking about here is making loans. Madam Speaker, I think that this makes a lot of sense. And in fact, what we're talking about is the problem of recidivism. This actually reduces this. I think it's been demonstrated in other states to reduce recidivism rates. So I think it's a win-win for society. We're not making the grants anymore, and the people that are getting the loans, you know, by and large, will pay them back. And, Madam Speaker, I think we're talking, you know, the previous speaker talked about co-signing with an inmate. Well, Madam Speaker, what we're really talking about is a person who's getting out of jail, and so this is a person who presumably, at least to some limited, to the extent that the jail term paid back his debt to society, has done that. And we're looking at trying to encourage this person to change his behavior, to get back into being a productive member of society. And, Madam Speaker, I think we need to provide some mechanism for doing that. And when people come out of prison, we slam every door in their face, there's no way that they're going to be able to become a productive member of society. They're just going to go back to their old, what they know how to do, and then, of course, they'll be back in jail again. So, Madam Speaker, while I don't want to, you know, say that we want to be patting people on the back for having gone to jail, on the other hand, Madam Speaker, I do think that we need to be realistic about the circumstances if we want to prevent them from, or encourage them to not go back to jail again. Thank you.
Ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 3? Would all members please proceed to vote? Please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
19 yeas, 20, or 17 nays.
And so Amendment Number 3 passes the House.
Can we have a brief meeting?
House, briefly stand at ease. Clerk, please read the next amendment on our desk.
Representative Robinson, beginning page 9, line 25.
Representative Robinson?
Yeah, Madam Speaker, I'll just move Amendment Number 4.
There is objection, Representative Robinson.
Madam Speaker, this is actually a pretty straightforward amendment, and I would hope that everybody would end up supporting it. And all it does is, under the assignment of wages, the way the language read right now, you have the number one priority would be child support, and then number two would be the student loans. And all I'm doing is inserting restitution to crime victims would come before the student loans. And so I think that is, if you really kind of look at our priority in society, I think we, you know, believe real strongly in making sure our children get their child support payments. But I also believe real strongly that the number two issue should be assisting our crime victims in being able to get appropriate restitution back. And so it's only a matter of priority. Puts restitution second, and then student loans would be the next in line. And I appreciate everybody supporting the amendment.
Further debate? Representative Bundy? Representative Brown?
Well, thank you, Madam Speaker. I was just going to briefly rise in support of the amendment. And I had spoken to some people, and I was confused, and I just wanted to clear that up. This section does not have anything to do with the permanent fund dividend. But on the permanent fund dividend, we do have a similar order of attachment, and it is child support, restitution to victims, student loan. So if we adopted this amendment, we would then have the same hierarchy of attachment for wages or assignment of wages. So I think it is a good amendment. I think restitution to victims of crime should come before payback of the student loan if we're going to set up some hierarchy like this. Right now, CSED, child support, is the only thing that has a priority. Everything else is first come, first served. So the policy change that's made in this bill is to put student loans up there as number two. And I'd submit that it does make sense to put the victims in there ahead of the student loans, and would urge your support for number four.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question being? Yes. The question being, shall the House adopt amendment number four? Would all members please proceed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
24 yeas, 11 nays.
And so amendment number four passes the House. Does the clerk have further amendments on her desk? House briefly stand at ease. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent the committee substitute for Senate Bill 123, Finance, amended House, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed in final passage.
There is objection. That will be held in third for tomorrow's calendar. Clerk, please read the next item on the calendar. Mr. Majority Leader.
I'm sorry. Never mind.
House briefly stand at ease. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
CS for Senate Bill 142, State Affairs, by the Senate State Affairs Committee, entitled An Act Establishing the Alaska Human Resource Investment Council and transferring certain functions of other entities to the Council, abolishing the Employment Security Advisory Council, establishing a planning mechanism for employment training and other human resource investment needs, and providing for an effective date. Finance Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with House CS for Senate Bill 142, Finance, with the same title, adopts the House Finance Committee letter of intent, recommending due pass Foster, Hanley, Mulder, Navarre, Grusendorf, Kelly, Brown, Terrio, Parnell, Coring. No recommendation, Martin. The report was signed by Hanley and Foster, co-chairs. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam Speaker, move and ask unanimous consent that the House Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 142, State Affairs, be considered be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection to the adoption of the House Finance Committee substitute? If not, the House Finance Committee substitute is before us. Does the clerk have amendments?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam Speaker, move and ask unanimous consent that House Committee substitute for Committee substitute for Senate Bill 142, Finance, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed in final passage.
Without objection, we are under third. The clerk, please read the title for the third and final time.
House CS for Senate Bill 142, Finance, by the House Finance Committee, entitled An Act Establishing the Alaska Human Resource Investment Council and transferring certain functions of other entities to the Council, abolishing the Employment Security Advisory Council, establishing a planning mechanism for employment training and other human resource investment needs, and providing for an effective date.
Debate? Are you ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt House Committee substitute, the committee substitute for Senate Bill 142, Finance? Would members please proceed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
32 yeas, 1 nay.
So House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 142 has passed the House. Just a moment, please. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent the roll call on House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 142 Finance be considered the roll call and the effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted.
Three effective date clauses.
Would you amend your amendment?
Clause is.
Thank you. House briefly stand at ease.
Madam Speaker, we have a letter of intent.
Come back to order.
Madam Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on the House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute Senate Bill 142 Finance be considered the roll call on the Finance Committee Letter of Intent.
Without objection, the Finance Committee Letter of Intent is adopted. Now, we'll stand at ease. Pardon me? The House come back to order. We're going back up the calendar to consideration of committee substitute for Senate Bill 123, Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam Speaker, move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for Senate Bill 123 Finance be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Is there objection? No objection. We are under third. Would the clerk please read the title for Senate Bill 123 for the third and final time?
Yes, for Senate Bill 123 Finance, amended House by the Senate Finance Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Student Loan Programs and Fees for Review of Postsecondary Education Institutions, relating to a post-secondary student exchange program administered by the Western Interstate Commission on Higher Education and providing for an effective date.
Debate. Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Just very briefly, this bill had three very broad purposes. One, to improve financial stability of the student loan. Two, to improve program administration. And three, to improve customer service. It is amended by Amendment Number 2, I don't believe it any longer improves financial stability and as such can no longer vote for the bill.
Representative Toohey.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I really hope that we look at the long-term effect of what we're doing to this student loan bill. I was very supportive of the bill as it came out of our committee. We hire very qualified people to rearrange this whole the whole system so that it will go on for my grandchildren and grandchildren's grandchildren, and then we turn around and we change it in this body so that it does not have the benefit. And I'm really disappointed. Thank you.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt committee substitute for Senate Bill 123? Members, please proceed to vote. Please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Will the clerk please tally the board?
22 yeas, 13 nays.
And so committee substitute for Senate Bill 123 Finance has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on committee substitute for Senate Bill 123 Finance, amended House, be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
There's no roll call. You just have to move it. There's not enough votes.
I'm sorry, we do need 27. Madam Speaker, move the effective date clause.
Question before the body is the adoption of the effective date clause. Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
34 yeas, 0 nays.
And so the effective date clause has been adopted. Would the clerk please void the roll? Call for the vote again, Representative Martin. I don't think your vote was recorded. On the effective date clause? Would all members please proceed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
38 yeas, 0 nays.
And so the effective date clause has been adopted.
Madam Speaker.
Representative Navarre.
I'd like to serve notice of reconsideration on my vote on Senate Bill 123.
Notice of reconsideration has been given. This brings us back down the calendar to consideration. Representative Bundy.
Yes, I'd like to serve reconsideration of my vote on CS for SB 142.
Reconsideration has been given for 142. Brings us down to the calendar, consideration of House Bill 288. Clerk, please read the next item on the calendar.
CS for House Bill Number 288, Labor and Commerce, by the House Labor and Commerce Committee, entitled an act relating to procurement preferences.
House, briefly stand at ease. Order. Representative Hanley?
Hasn't been added. There's an amendment, I believe it's being duplicated. Is that correct? It should be coming in.
I'll stand very briefly at ease. Back to order. Did you make the advancement to third yet? Okay. Pardon me? Would you make the motion? Representative Hanley?
Madam Speaker, it's my amendment, so I'll move that we go back to second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment, that being amendment number one.
Without objection, we're back in second. Representative Hanley?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I've checked with a number of people.
Would you move the amendment?
I would move amendment number one. And I'll just briefly explain, since everybody hasn't had a chance to...
Representative Hanley, please briefly explain.
Thank you. What this would do is basically reinstate the provision that allows the Commissioner of Administration to renegotiate leases on state buildings or where state offices are held to obtain at least a 10% savings if they sign a contract for a certain amount of time. And it's basically the same language that was allowed before. They have some other leases that are up that they think may be able to have some savings over the next couple of years in our leasing agreement area. And this would reinstate that once again. It ran out in December of this year.
Without objections, Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I am concerned about this amendment, Madam Speaker. I've never seen it before, never heard it before, but the question I'd ask before I could really offer any comments is, what triggered this doing this, because it has an amazing resemblance to a memo I received from Ledge Council about the Anchorage LIO building with almost the same provisions in it. So that's what's behind it. If it is, I'd at least like to know that and offer some comments on it.
Representative Hanley?
Madam Speaker, to my knowledge, this, at least I'm the one that's offering it, had nothing to do with the Anchorage LIO leasing. What it did have to do with is in the budget process, reductions in the leasing line in the Department of Administration that were made in both the House and the Senate, and trying to give the administration flexibility to meet that budget that we've provided for them, and also to be able to provide some additional savings in the future. So it is not related to any specific lease or as a result of what's going on with any specific lease. It has more to do with trying to find savings in our operating budget, and the Commissioner of Administration thinks that they can find some additional savings if they have this tool still available. The tool ran out at the end of December for the last one. There was a time limit on it, as there is on this one, and this just provides that tool for an additional amount of time that hopefully they'll be able to renegotiate leases and find some more savings both in next year and future year leasing budgets.
Representative Martin?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Since I opened the gate for talking, it's been a very effective procedure. Over $28 million has been saved in the last 4 years by renegotiating. And a lot of these, most of these buildings and the reports go to LBNA to tell us almost quarterly what they're doing, but it's really been a big saver in general funds.
Representative Roekberg?
Madam Speaker, I'd ask the maker of the amendment. On line 13, it provides a differential of 5% to 10% for meeting the requirements of the Americans with Disability Act. I would like to point out that the Americans with Disability Act under Title III requires that all public accommodations, that is, offices that are housed state premises, have to be in compliance with the ADA. Ergo, I'm wondering why we would lower the percentage 5 points if in fact they're going to be in compliance. Therefore, I would perhaps offer a friendly amendment, or we can have a slight at ease to discuss the issue.
Madam Speaker.
Representative Brown?
Just one more thing. I'm interested in knowing the answer to that last question about the ADA. But the question I was going to ask, Madam Speaker, is this Section 3 going to be a part of law? And I'm just curious as to where in the law it goes, because it just says Section 3, lease extensions authorized, subsection A. So is there something missing, or is it a temporary provision, or why doesn't it go to a particular statute is my question.
Representative Hanley?
I believe it's temporary because it is repealed in September 1st, 2000, so it becomes a temporary section of law, which is my understanding of why. As to the Americans with Disabilities Act, I believe when they renegotiate leases, they are going to have to bring some of these up to standard. Clearly, they are supposed to be at standard now. We do not, just because everybody is not and will not. And most of my understanding of the member that raised the question knows more than I do about this particular issue. But my understanding is they have to have a plan on how they're getting there. Most of the buildings, or many of the buildings, are not up to the standards in this state of Americans with Disabilities Act. And it's going to take them some time to do that. This was originally to encourage some of the buildings to be brought up to the code and taking into consideration that there would be some costs in doing that and to try and achieve at least some savings for us and get the benefit of having those code compliance brought up to the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Further debate? Representative Roper?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. For the information of the body, the state of Alaska and every public entity in the state must be in compliance with the ADA on January 26, 1995. So now, if we're not in compliance, we're breaking the federal law as we stand here. Additionally, I have a concern about this amendment as it's written, because I think there should be a consideration given for leasehold interests that expire within a, say, 12-month calendar date. And if those, this provision is put into place, presently, this would go against the grain of the crucible of the marketplace, allowing both the agency and a landlord to renegotiate their lease or forcing the state agency to go out into the marketplace and put out an RFP to give other landlords an opportunity to bid on the lease, particularly if there's a very short window here, say, for example, 12 months, in which they could go out through the process. So I think a additional amendment might be to restrict that to leases that expire beyond 12 months or something like that. So.
Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The sponsor of the amendment, I believe, said that this is just putting back into law a provision that was already a temporary provision and expired. Madam Speaker, I'm trying to find that. Can the sponsor tell me what year it is? If it's in the temporary acts, I could find it that way, but I'd appreciate some directions to where that is so I can compare the two.
Representative Hanley?
With me, I'll have to check. There is one change, and originally they may extend up to a maximum extension of 5 years. The commissioner asked for a 10-year extension, and this says 8 years. That's the one change from the temporary law. I don't have it. I'd have to call on Ed's to get a copy.
Chairman?
We can do it under reconsideration. House, come back to order. Further debate on amendment number one. You ready for the question? Would the members please come in and take their seats so we can proceed to vote? Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I appreciated the explanation. I was able to find the temporary act. It was from 1993, and the only difference does appear to be the increase of the 5%, the 5 years to a maximum extension of 8 years. I still do have some concerns with it, but I certainly better understand it. Thank you.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Just briefly, just one quick question for the Finance Chair. How much right now do we spend on leases for state facilities? And that amount, then I would know what 10% of that amount meant in potential savings, which I know is going to be a great deal of money.
Further debate? Representative Hanley?
I don't have that number in the top of my head, Madam Speaker. I have to. It's it's in the multi, it's above 10 million and under 50 million, I think, but I don't know. I'd have to look at, and I can't find it in my budget thing right now.
We'll get it later. Are you ready for the question? Are you ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt amendment number one? Would all members please proceed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Representative Willis?
I vote for me.
Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? The clerk, please tally the board.
28 yeas, 5 nays.
So amendment number one has passed the House. This puts us back into third. Madam Clerk, did you read the title again?
Already?
You did. We're under debate. Is there debate? You ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt committee substitute for House Bill 288, Labor and Commerce, under reconsideration? Would members please proceed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
33 yeas, 1 nay.
And so, committee substitute for House Bill 288 has passed the House under reconsideration. Mr. Majority Leader, effective date?
Madam Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent to the roll call on committee substitute for House Bill 288, Labor and Commerce, be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
CS for Senate Bill 117, HESS, by the Senate Health, Education, and Social Services Committee, entitled An Act Establishing a Statewide Independent Living Council and Clarifying Its Relationship with Existing Agencies and Providing for an Effective Date. We're in third reading, Madam Speaker.
Debate? Representative Toohey?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I request permission of the body to go back to second reading for the specific of an amendment.
Without objection, we are under second for the purpose of a specific amendment. That being amendment number one, Representative Toohey.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This amendment will...
Representative Toohey, would you move the amendment?
I move amendment number one.
No objection.
Without objection, amendment number one is adopted.
You don't want to hear me talk.
This puts us back into third into debate. Is there debate? Are you ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt committee substitute for Senate Bill 117? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
34 yeas, 0 nays.
And so, committee substitute for Senate Bill 117, HESS, amended House, has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on committee substitute for Senate Bill 117, HESS, amended House, be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
House Concurrent Resolution Number 14 by the House State Affairs Committee suspending Uniform Rules 24C, 35, 41B, and 42E of the Alaska State Legislature concerning Senate Bill Number 5 relating to election administration and the Alaska Election Code.
We're under final hearings on final reading on House Concurrent Resolution 14. Is there debate? Mr. Minority Leader?
Just if members aren't familiar, this is the resolution that was spoke by the member from North Pole regarding SB 5, which was on the calendar earlier. I would urge members to vote yes.
Ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt House Concurrent Resolution Number 14? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Clerk, please, does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
35 yeas, 0 nays.
And so House Concurrent Resolution 14 passes the House. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
Senate Concurrent Resolution number 18 by Senators Taylor, Pierce, Kelly, Torgerson, Green, Miller, Lehman, Sharp, Rieger, Halford, Salo, Duncan, Ellis, Lincoln, Zara, Phillips, Donnelly, Frank, Adams, Representatives Willis, Navarre, Grusendorf, Bryce, and Ivan, honoring the military veterans of World War II and commemorating the 50th anniversary of the end of World War II. I have no committee substitute or amendments on my desk.
We have a final reading. Is there debate? Representative Brown?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would just ask why this is being presented as a resolution instead of a citation.
Further debate? Representative Willis?
Madam Speaker, this resolution honors the veterans of World War II and commemorates the 50th anniversary of the end of World War II. World War II began in Europe in September of 1939 with Nazi Germany's invasion of Poland. The rest of Europe was soon swept up in the life and death struggle against the tyranny of Hitler's Germany. America's immediate response was one of strict neutrality. Slowly, sentiment and concern turned towards England after the fall of France. The indiscriminate bombing of English cities by German Luftwaffe, as well as submarine attacks and sinking of neutral ships, including several of our own. We began helping England with a lend-lease program that allowed them to buy war materials from us, as well as leasing 50 World War I destroyers. On Sunday, December 7th, 1941, without warning, the Japanese attacked the United States at Pearl Harbor. President Roosevelt called it a day that would live in infamy. In his address to the nation on December 9, 1941, 2 days after the sneak attack on Pearl Harbor, President Roosevelt said, "We are now in this war. We are in it all the way. Every single man, woman, and child is a partner in the most tremendous undertaking in American history. We must share together the bad news and the good news, the defeats and the victories, the changing fortunes of war. America was united as one." Not only does this resolution honor the nearly 12 million men and women who served their country in the military and the nearly 400,000 who lost their lives or were injured, but I think it also honors those on the home front who produced the war materials for the men and women on the fighting lines. Training camps and airfields were built, factories and shipyards were converted to produce the materials of war. By war's end, the United States had produced 300,000 planes, 87,000